Can we please talk about UFC 256? That has rolled around real quick, hasn't it? I mean, it probably rolled around a little bit quicker for Figueiredo because he only fought last week. But yeah, either way, I'm going to be looking at that at the event coming up this week. Have a quick recap of last week's event because obviously, as you know, I like to put on some really terrible betting. And let's just see how some of that panned out. One of the main takeaways from last week's fight night at the Apex Center, that Leavitt fella, Jordan Leavitt, I think. Wow, what a slam. If you want to see like a really sickening like slam knockout, go back and watch his fight against Wyman, who has since retired. That was ridiculous because he really engineered it as well. He engineered to do it. Do you know what I mean? To knock him out with that slam. And I've got to say, I think that Leavitt might be a serial killer, right? You go back and watch his post-fight interview. Look at the way he speaks and his mannerisms. It's got serial killer written all over. He has got frozen heads in his freezer, man. He has definitely got a couple of frozen body parts in a freezer somewhere. Mark my words. So, the other thing that I would take away from last week's event is that Ivan St. Preux is probably done at this point, isn't he? He's probably, I mean, I'll get into it in the news later, but obviously the UFC are looking to make a couple of cuts here and there. And Ivan St. Preux, he didn't look good in that fight, although he did just knock out Menafield, which was a big shock to a lot of people. So maybe he's got legs. His contract probably isn't that expensive. The UFC are probably looking to cut more expensive prospects, although I don't know what his contract is. He's been around a while, it might be quite substantial, but either way, not a good night for St. Preux. Hermanson, right, let's get into my bets last week. Now last week, Hermanson came in as an underdog against Marvin Vettori, which I said at the time I thought it was odd, but I did make a little cheeky bet on that one, so let's just see what I was thinking there. Which is why the submission at 4.50, there's actually a special on Skybet, which is who I bet with, at 5.50 on the submission for Jack Hermanson. That is the bet I'm going with because I think that Jack Hermanson is likely to get the submission. And that should be about it. So I can reveal to you that your winner, by decision, Marvin Vettori. Ugh. Well, congratulations, Marvin. But that doesn't do very well for my betting balance there. But and to be fair, Vettori, he looked really good. It was a really interesting fight actually. It was quite a fun one to watch. But it was back and forth the whole way. Neither one of them really saw. It was interesting because I thought that Hermanson looked really tired really early, but then kind of stayed at that level of tired throughout the rest of the fight. Didn't really kind of get any more gassed. Whereas Vettori, he seemed to hold his energy right up until like the third and fourth, where I thought he had like a pretty steep drop off in his output. But then again, yeah, that's the nature of the third and fourth round, isn't it? Vettori looked good, man. He looked really good. The pressure, just the forward pressure that he was putting on was really, really quite impressive. He is now obviously calling out Israel Adesanya again because he thought that he won that fight. I mean, he didn't. Their fight, Adesanya clearly did enough on the scorecards to get past Vettori. Was it a spectacular win? No. Was it? No. Did Vettori have some moments against Adesanya where he looked good? Yes, he did. And is Vettori a better fighter today? I would argue yes. Yes, he is. Would he beat Israel Adesanya tomorrow? No, I don't think he would. With all due respect to Marvin Vettori, I mean, to be fair, like, Vettori looked really good and he wants that fight with Adesanya back. So he's a very driven, very, very strong individual. And you know what? If he went forward and smothered Adesanya and stopped Adesanya from getting into his own range, then yeah, he could maybe beat Adesanya. But I don't, the Adesanya that we see, that we've seen in the last couple of fights, I don't know. It's a bit of a reach to think that Vettori could possibly best him, especially over five. I don't know. You never know in this game. But yeah, congratulations to Vettori. He looked really good. I hope he does maybe get his title shot against Adesanya. It would be an interesting one. I'd definitely watch it. But I also had a little bit on Collier, Justin Collier. This was a heavyweight fight with Gian Vellante. Now, it wasn't so much that I was betting on Collier, it's that I didn't really trust Gian Vellante as a favourite, because at heavyweight he's just looked he's looked like a mess, if I'm totally honest. And here was my thinking before that fight, but you never know. But either way, yeah, that'll be interesting. I'm taking Collier by decision in that one, and I can reveal that your winner by decision, Justin Collier. Wow. Okay, I got one right. Had a little bit of money in my betting account on a Sunday morning. I was pretty happy with that one. Not a lot of money, because I keep those stakes low, people. Because when your betting is as terrible as mine, you can't put a lot down, because you'll be broke as fuck. Collier. The thing is, that didn't surprise me. I thought 6-1 on the Collier decision was quite frankly outrageous. And had a little go on that. Had a little flutter. So yeah, I did have a little bit of betting money in my account on the Sunday morning, and you know what, Collier looked good, but let's be realistic, it's against a guy that ate Gian Vellante. Gian Vellante has decided to go up to heavyweight, but he's not a heavyweight, he's a light heavyweight, you know what I mean? And it's just Gian Vellante, with respect, I would be shocked to see him make it through the next round of cuts in the UFC. I would be astounded, quite frankly. But, you know, I do like Gian Vellante. I like watching him fight. So I hope he does stay. But I don't see it on his recent run of form. Moving on to the news. So the biggest news, as I've been alluding to in the recap of last week's event, is that Dana White revealed that... obviously, because Anderson Silva got cut, and there was Yoel Romero as well. Basically, Dana White has come out and said, look, we're looking to... our rosters are overinflated, and we're looking to cut, you know, up to 60 fighters before the end of the year. You're going to see some big names going. Those were his words. So far, the biggest casualties we've seen, Yoel Romero, Anthony Rumble Johnson, and Rachel Ostovich. I don't know why people were surprised about Ostovich. Like, with respect, she hasn't got the best record in the world. She didn't look good in her last fight either. I mean, yes, is she attractive? Yeah, she's pretty attractive, but I mean, that's not what I watch fighting for. Do you know what I mean? It's like attractiveness is important in a porn star. Do you know what I mean? I find that very important. You know, he's got to look good. Just kidding. But look, you know, Ostovich, she's not got a good record. She didn't look good in her last fight, so I don't see why people are really that surprised that the UFC have let her go. Hopefully she'll string a few wins together in another division, in another fight organization, because another organization will snap her up, because she is young and she does look good. So that is something. That's a start, but you do have to be able to put it together in the octagon as well. Junior Dos Santos is fighting this week. You've got to think that with a loss, he's probably on the chopping block as well. He's lost his last three. However, I would argue that he's also won three of his last six. He's knocked out some people that he wasn't really, some really young up and coming prospects that he wasn't necessarily touted to be knocking out. So I'm not counting him out of this week just yet, but I'll get into that a little bit later on. Surely Ovince St. Preux, after his loss last week, I would be very surprised to not see him cut as well. And Mike Perry, he's completely losing his mind. He keeps on putting these tweets out that are just quite frankly bizarre. He hasn't had a win in quite some time. If he makes it through this round of cuts, I'm going to be quite frankly astounded. But you know what, it'd be interesting to see where a lot of these names end up, because other fight organizations will snap them up. And I will get into some there's some potential fights for some, you know, close to retired fighters in other organizations. So we've got obviously one of those fights, one of the most interesting fights, I think, is obviously Rumble Johnson. He hasn't fought in the UFC in quite some time. We've got him just up here. Basically, he was, I call him a casualty of the cuts. He's not really, because he wasn't so much on their roster to be cut. They've just parted ways. Like, he was because he was wanting to make a comeback in the UFC's light heavyweight division, but the UFC have now said that they are not interested. They have released him from his contract. I don't know how many fights he had left on his deal, but I do believe he had some fights left on. But yeah, they've decided to part ways pretty amicably. But Bellator have already signed Rumble Johnson, as far as I'm aware. So unfortunately, if we go on to the next bit, we've got TRT Belfort. I always call him TRT Belfort because he's over in ONE FC now, over in Japan, or I think it's Japan, but it's East Asia somewhere anyway. But basically, they're not quite as strict with the drug testing out there. So you've got Vitor Belfort out there, and he is looking shredded. I mean, this is not a recent picture of him. This was at his peak TRT. But I was saying that, you know, I would not hate seeing a matchup between either TRT Belfort and Anthony Rumble Johnson, which obviously isn't going to happen now because Johnson has signed with Bellator. But I don't know how many fights that deal is for. You don't know how long TRT can keep Belfort ticking. You know, maybe in 5 years, Belfort will still have veins coming out of his teeth and traps above his fucking ears, and he'll still be fighting. And maybe Johnson will have fought out his deal in Bellator, and we'll get to see that fight. But one fight we might see is obviously Yoel Romero as well. Yoel Romero, I'll put him on the other side there. How fun would a fight between TRT Belfort and Yoel Romero, who is not quite tested as much as he was in the UFC? I mean, he did fail a drug test once, but he got overturned because it was found out to be a tainted supplement. I'm talking about Yoel Romero here. But look at Yoel Romero. Let's flick over to Yoel Romero now, because Yoel Romero, obviously, one of the bigger pieces of news was obviously Yoel Romero parted ways with the UFC last week as part of their round of cuts. It's what sparked Dana White to say they were going to be cutting 60 odd people. Now, Yoel Romero, at first, like all of the big organizations, like your Bellators, your PFLs, all those guys were passing on Yoel Romero, saying they weren't interested. Well, seems like over the last couple of days, from what I've been reading, a lot of those guys have been backtracking pretty quickly, and they're all pretty interested in signing Yoel Romero. I think Bellator are back in the hunt. Obviously, Bare Knuckle FC are in the hunt. They're never not, are they? They seem to have this bottomless pit of money that they just keep throwing at these absolute legends. But they're paying out way too much money for these guys. They're going to do an affliction. They're going to fold. They're going to fold like cheap laundry. It's going to enjoy it while it lasts. Bare Knuckle FC is not going to be around in 2 years. They must be racking up debt. They can't be making money on their events, judging by their pay-per-view figures and their gates. They cannot be making money on the amount that they are paying, like, basically retired fighters to come and fight for them. They're offering them like $1 million deals, but from what I've heard, they haven't actually been paying out their tabs. They haven't been paying their fighters. There's a lot of fighters that are still waiting for money from Bare Knuckle FC, but I don't think that's where Yoel Romero lands. I think that he is still relevant enough to go to another big mixed martial arts organization, like your Bellators, like your ONE FCs. I would love to see him go to ONE FC and fight TRT Belfort. We'll go back to that image there. TRT Belfort, man, against Yoel Romero. Sign me up. Sign me up to that, please. I will watch that all day. And other bit of news. It's not really news. It's John Jones talking again, basically. He keeps talking about, you know, because obviously one of the biggest narratives from John Jones's career at the moment is obviously the fact he's going up to the heavyweight division. Now, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that he does well up at heavyweight. A lot of people are saying, yeah, he's gonna go up and he's just gonna dominate, he's gonna, you know, beat Stipe for the belt. It's like, I don't know if he will. Stipe's a big guy and he's fucking skilled. Do you know what I mean? He's skilled as fuck. I don't know that John Jones necessarily goes up there and just automatically dominates. Because John Jones, he's saying in this statement, basically, that light heavyweight was just boring him, basically. And I suppose there's a case to be had for that, because it did look like he was bored in his last few fights. But you better not be going up to heavyweight bored, mate, because you might just, you know, you won't be bored to sleep. You might be knocked to sleep by some of those cats up there, because they're big guys. They're built differently. You saw it when Gustafsson fought Fabricio Werdum. Gustafsson came in as a massive favourite. And I don't really know why, because when you looked at them squaring off, it's like, yeah, you've got a slightly pudgy, overweight, light heavyweight that hasn't trained, that hasn't cut weight for this fight, against a guy who could not make 205 if you cut his fucking leg off. Like, it's all in the neck and just the thickness. They're built different up there, man. Like you guys like Curtis Blaydes, he is not making 205, right? And if you think that someone from light heavyweight, even someone as good as John Jones, is just going to walk up to heavyweight and beat Curtis Blaydes, you're dreaming. Like, maybe Jones can beat Curtis Blaydes, because Jones is pretty fucking good, but... And people keep on going on about how big he looks. It's like, yeah, he looks big for John Jones, but he's still going to be about maybe like 235, 240 tops. He's not going to be tipping the scales at your 265s like your Francis Ngannous and this Cyril Gain fella who's fighting Junior Dos Santos. You see the size of him. You see the size of these cats at heavyweight. Like, Jones isn't necessarily going up there and dominating. In fact, like, depending on who his first opponent is, like, obviously, Jones is going to come in as a favourite. Obviously, it's John Jones. But I think he could make some money on his first opponent at heavyweight, because I don't think he's necessarily going to win. I really don't. I think that size is a big factor, especially when it comes up to the bigger guys, because it's a big jump from 205 to 265. That's a huge leap, right? And I just don't... And thing is, it's like, obviously, you know, skill... You want all the skills and everything as well, but size does matter. That is why they have weight divisions, right? And those guys, they pack a different power. They have a different kind of strength when you're going to the ground with them. I mean, if Curtis Blaydes shot a double leg on John Jones, I don't see John Jones necessarily being able to defend that. And I don't know if Jones has the one-punch knockout power that Francis Ngannou has, which is what... Curtis Blaydes has run into is the one punch power of Ngannou. Other than that, he's pretty much unblemished in his career. And Curtis Blaydes, I still think Curtis Blaydes gets the belt before Francis Ngannou does. That's my bold prediction. Curtis Blaydes gets the UFC heavyweight title before Francis Ngannou. And That's a bold prediction right there. But that's the news basically wrapped up. Let's move on to one of my favourite segments, which is the Troll of the Week. It's not always like just UFC based, as you will see, but this one really made me chuckle, because I actually remember seeing Dana White way back in the day. I think it was one of the Ken Shamrock Tito Ortiz fight cards, and this guy comes out, and I did think at the time, I was like, who the fuck is that guy? He looks like a used car salesman. And this guy's picked up on that, because back in those days, like, Dana White didn't shave his head. He looks like he didn't really work out quite as much. Like, he was going for the kind of cleaner kind of suit look. And it's like, this guy's pointed out that Dana White has gone from looking like a divorced used car salesman to a character from the Fast and the Furious. And you know what? He's not wrong, is he? Look at the state of that. That's fucking brilliant. Love that. And then we've got Paddy Power here trolling Logan Paul. But I thought it was Jake Paul that was fighting Floyd. I might be wrong there, but I think Paddy Power might have gotten that wrong. But Paddy Power, they're trolling Logan Paul. If it is Logan, I thought it was Jake that was fighting Floyd. But either way, he's saying, look, Paul could be a stepping stone to Brian from Accounts, or even the bouncer from the Witness Weatherspoons. Hey, that could be, it's just fucking brilliant. Because it is, it's bizarre, isn't it? Like, they're pointing out they're not taking bets on that fight because it's an exhibition, and also because Jake Paul is a YouTuber. But they're saying Logan Paul. I don't think that's right. Either way, made me laugh. Fucking loved it. And this one is actually one of mine. It's not really trolling. It was just kind of... My heart stopped when I saw it. I was looking at Tony's Instagram, and I saw a picture of him training, running around the mat, and his fucking shoelaces are untied. You crazy motherfucker. You are literally a couple of years removed from tripping over a wire and tearing your ACL, and you're fucking doing laps of the mat with your fucking shoelaces untied. Get a fucking clue, mate. Get a grip. Jesus Christ, I know you're a fucking wild man and you like to do all this crazy shit, but for the love of God, Tony, we want the fight. We want to see you fight Charles Oliveira. Stop taking unnecessary risks. That is unnecessary, sir. Unnecessary. But, they both seem fine, though. They both seem like they've made weight. So, let's move on to this week's fight. Because there are some really interesting fights on this card. I am going to start off in the lightweight division, right? We've got Moicano against Rafael Fiziev. Now, Fiziev is someone that I've had my eye on for quite some time. Go back and watch some of Fiziev's kickboxing, right? He does what they call like the Matrix moves. Like basically he bends backwards, like and dodges kicks, but he basically goes flat back and just bounces back up like a cobra. It's insane. He's a very high level kickboxer, very high level. Now, he does get a lot of decisions. The decision for Fiziev is 2.88. All the odds are up here for you, by the way, just in case you wanted to make any of your own picks there. His two UFC wins are both by decision. And his other UFC fight, he lost by TKO. He got spinning back kicked right in the gut. It was a good finish by his opponent. But I would say that Moicano, he's been KO'd by Sung Jun and also Jose Aldo. I do think that Fiziev finds his first UFC knockout here. I really do. I think that he finds it. And the knockout for Fiziev, because he's gotten decisions so far, it is 3.50. That, for me, is worth a cheeky little bet. And I think that there's potential for something spectacular here. Keep an eye on Fiziev. He really is. He's a very high-level kickboxer. And he's quite good at keeping the fight standing as well, which is important if you're a high-level kickboxer in the UFC, obviously. So, yeah. Keep an eye on that one. I think Fiziev gets his first UFC knockout. So, we've then got, let's go to the heavyweights. The heavyweights on the main card. Junior Dos Santos against Cyril Gane. Now, Cyril Gane is this gigantic guy from France that they've brought over. He's a big cat. He is a big guy, right? And he's 1.80 to get the knockout. Obviously, Gane is coming in as one of the heaviest favorites. I think he is the heaviest favorite on the card, it looks like, anyway. 1.25 favorite versus Dos Santos, who's coming in at the 4-1 underdog. He's got +4 there. That's crazy when you consider what Dos Santos has done in his career. And, but one thing I would look at there is obviously the knockout for Gane is 1.80, but here's a fun fact for you. Gane has more submissions than knockouts, and he has as many decisions as he does knockouts. So if you're going to be betting on Cyril Gane, I would say take the submission at 11 there. I've had just a quick go on that because he's not it doesn't really specify what his credentials are in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but he seems to go for it. He's got one win by heel hook in the UFC, I think. I think he got submission of the night for that. And he seems to go for a lot of submissions. So I think, actually, yeah, the submission is the way to go if you're betting on Gane in that one. But I have a sneaky suspicion that Dos Santos might pull one out here. I think this might be a situation like when he fought Ty Tiavasa. Everyone thought that Tiavasa was going to walk through him, and then he didn't. And because Dos Santos, we all forget that, look, it's the heavyweight division. So, yeah, he has his losses. He's lost his last three. So, yeah, you're going to have your luck. But look at the guys that he's fought in his last three. Rozenstruik, Ngannou. Do you know what I mean? He's fought an actual murderer's row. Because he's a former champion, he never gets easy fights. He fights murderer after murderer. Now, Gane has fought nobody in the octagon. Let's be realistic. He's fought nobody up to this point. Like, Dos Santos is definitely his biggest name, and arguably it's going to be his biggest test. Now, Gane, he doesn't seem like, if he stands with Dos Santos, I think he's going to get knocked out. I really do, because he's so much bigger. He's going to be so much slower. Dos Santos is very good at boxing. His boxing is really very, very good. But we haven't really seen the Ngannou / Rozenstruik power out of gain in his career so far. He's gotten some TKOs. Like I said, he goes for submissions quite a lot. He also goes to decisions, but he's only six fights in. He is big. Do you know what I mean? He's really big. And he is very well versed in kickboxing. But I think DeSantos pulls one out of the bag here. And the knockout 7.50, worth a go on that. Do you know what I mean? I think DeSantos, that heavyweight division, you're only like one punch away from getting the knockout. It's so unpredictable that to have somebody as that heavy a favourite when they fought nobody, I think there's good value on DeSantos there. I'm going to take Junior DeSantos by knockout. So let's now go to the main card. Again, this is an interesting one because we've got Kevin Holland here, who's fought very actively this year. And he was supposed to fight Hermanson, but COVID kept him out of that. But he is returning this week and he's going to be fighting another chap who got a fight cancelled due to COVID, Mr. Jacare Souza. Jacare Souza, obviously, legend at the in the sport. He was Strikeforce champion, I believe. He's always very difficult. He's kind of a gatekeeper now, if I'm totally honest. But D'Souza, Ronaldo D'Souza, he's coming in as a favourite here, which I find a little bit strange because Souza has not looked great in his last few outings. I mean, he got the knockout against Chris Weidman, but I think he was losing that fight up until that point. I think it was a relatively close fight, but yeah, he just kind of uncorked a punch and caught him. Other than that, he's not looked brilliant. He got dominated by Jack Hermanson. I think that Holland has got a really good chance here because a lot, like mixed martial arts, a lot of it is about momentum. I think sports in a lot of ways is just about momentum. And Kevin Holland has all the momentum behind him in the world. He's just coming off a couple of good wins. He's being very active. He's only a very slight underdog, 1.91, as you can see there. But what I like here is the double chance. I think he gets a finish against Souza. I really do. I think he gets the finish on Jacare and the double chance KO submission 3.10. That is what I'm going with there because Holland has 20 wins, 7 of which are by way of submission, 4 of them are by knockout. All right, he's on a 4-fight win streak. I don't see that Souza is the man to stop that win streak. I really don't. I think he gets the finish. Now Holland, he's active. He gets like 4.11 significant strikes in a minute, whereas Souza, Jacare, he absorbs a lot of strikes. He absorbs an average of 5 per minute. Well, just over 5, 5.08 strikes per minute he absorbs. I think Holland will just get the volume over him. He'll kill him with punches, and he'll likely get the stoppage in round 2 or 3. So my pick is Holland by stoppage, but I'm taking the 3.10 on the double chance because he does like a submission as well. But it's going to be pretty tough to submit Jacare Souza. He's pretty well versed on the ground. Moving on to the co-main event, the one that has everybody talking. Everybody wants to see this fight. It is Tony Ferguson against Charles Oliveira. El Kakui versus Dublonx. And we've got the odds up here. Tony Ferguson coming in is quite the heavy favourite. 2.53 over the 2.50 of Charles Oliveira. And this is going to be a fun fight. It's going to be really fun to watch. But I am going with Charles Oliveira in this one. But it's a 3-round fight, co-main event. I'm taking the decision because I think there's a lot of value there. You got plus 7 on the decision there. Now, the reason I'm saying that is because basically Ferguson, he just gets hit too much. He gets hit way too much because even in fights that he wins, he tends to either get knocked down or he takes a beating in the first round. And then he relies on his durability to come back and get the submission. Oliveira is far too slick on the ground to get caught in any of Tony's little traps there. I do not think that he's going to catch Charles Oliveira in a submission. Now, Tony does land a lot. He does, but he also gets hit a lot. Now, Oliveira, he's just very sharp. He's very good at takedowns as well. Tony's a bit too happy to fight off his back. And the problem is, against Charles Oliveira gets 2.8 takedowns per minute. That's a lot. He's very good at getting it to the floor. Now, Tony is very active off his back, but you're still on your back. You're still on your back, and in the eyes of the judges, you're going to be losing that fight. I think Tony's far too happy to just get taken down and to work off his back. He is not... I don't think he's going to find the submission off his back against somebody who is as high level in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in his own right as Charles Oliveira. So I think that it's probably... It's not going to be that exciting of a fight, I don't think, because I think a lot of it's going to play out on the floor. But it's going to be Charles Oliveira taking Tony Ferguson down and keeping him there, and he's going to cruise to a three-round decision. That's my pick. Charles Oliveira, by decision, set plus seven. Terrible bet. Awful. And then we've got the main event. Now, Figueiredo is coming in as just a huge favourite here. Plus 1.30. Rightly so. He's very, very good. But, and I wasn't even going to place a bet on this one, but I've, you know, I've put a quid down just because if there was going to be an upset, right, Figueiredo, the time is now. Because he fought about a month ago, right? He's a big boy for that weight class. He's very, very big. Now, that weight cut is no picnic for Figueiredo. It's no picnic. And he's now had to do it twice in about 5 weeks. That takes its toll. That's a really big toll. I mean, you go back to look at Tony Ferguson against Gaethje. Like Tony Ferguson did that weight cut for his first one anyway, and then came back and did another weight cut. Didn't work out well for him, did it? I'm not saying that that's why he lost to Gaethje, but you know, it does take its toll. Anyone that says it doesn't is mental. Do you know what I mean? Cutting that amount of weight, it takes its toll. You leave a bit of yourself there. Do you know what I mean? It's just you're only making that weight so many times, and he's just had to do it in a very quick turnaround. That is why I will take Moreno in this, but by decision. Right, plus 8.50. That's some good odds there. Because the thing is, Moreno is quite active, especially with the significant strikes. Joey, he gets roughly three or so a minute, and he's slightly more active than Figueiredo. I think the volume's going to take over. I do think that because I just think that Figueiredo, like I said, I think likelihood is he's probably going to win, but I'm just thinking that if there was going to be a time to upset Figueiredo, it's going to be when he's done his second weight cut in 5 weeks and he's maybe slightly underestimating his opponent. And I just think that if he can get through, if Moreno just keeps the volume up and just goes ahead on the scorecard, he might make Figueiredo desperate enough to just like make some mistakes, and he's going to get tired as well. Two weight cuts in 5 weeks, that to me is alarm bells. That could mean his stamina drops off very quickly, and if that happens, then Moreno is going to cruise to a easy 5-round decision. New champion by decision, Moreno. Those are my picks. And so I've also got some really, really horrible bets on. Now I forgot to write them down, but yeah, so if I'll put them up here because I know I've got them up here. So basically, I've got about 30 to 1 on all of my picks so far by just to win. So you've got Fiziev, Holland, Oliveira, DeSantos, Moreno. Not Moreno. I didn't put Moreno in there because that one I have no confidence in whatsoever. So I've taken those four. That's a four way. That's about 30 odd to one. But when it gets interesting is when you take Fiziev by knockout, Holland by the finish, as I mentioned, just to stoppage, just to finish the fight, Oliveira by decision, and DeSantos by knockout, you get a terrible bet. Whoo! That is a stinker. That's why they've given it plus 500 to 1. Like 500 odd to 1. I forget what it actually is, but it's there on the screen for you. That is a ridiculously terrible bet. That's the kind I like. But yeah, so anyways, we'll see. I'm really looking forward to this fight card. I hope you enjoyed the fights as well. If you enjoyed my little roundup and my take on things, please just like and subscribe. It really helped me out a lot. And until next time, keep those odds long and those bets terrible.